From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Tuesday, July 14th, 2020. Primary voters are turning out today to select which Democrat they'd like to face off against Senator Susan Collins and which Republican will challenge Representative Jared Golden. But some voters say they're turning out for other reasons. Katie Moeller says she wanted to weigh in on a Portland-specific ballot question that would establish a commission to review the city's charter. She says it's important that white people listen to black leadership.
There's a lot that's being said, and I think that as a white person, you know, my role right now is to really be listening and following their leadership.
Black Lives Matter organizers in the city have called for people to support the initiative with the goal of abolishing the city manager role. Organizers say the city manager position is not accountable to the public and limits the voice and power of people of color in the city. Several of Maine's planned swab and send testing sites for COVID-19 have opened, with a total of 18 expected to launch within the next 2 weeks. Maine's Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Jean Lambrew says tests from the sites will be sent to the state lab, where results will be processed in 24 to 48 hours.
Creating Maine-based testing capacity is important as national laboratories struggle to handle other states' surge of COVID-19 cases.
Turnaround time at private labs can take a week or more. Locations of the swab and send sites extend from Fort Kent to Calais to South Portland. A full list can be found at get-tested-covid19.org. 8 new cases of COVID-19 have been diagnosed in Maine since Monday, according to the Maine Center for Disease Control. The total number of cases to date is 3,566. 3,062 people have recovered. No new deaths are being reported. That number remains 114. In the weather, tonight, showers and storms dry up with areas of lowland fog, lows 51 to 60 degrees. Tomorrow, partly cloudy for the northern half of Maine, to the south, partly sunny. Less humid statewide, highs in the 70s for most, with upper 60s along the coast east of Harpswell. Thursday, more sun than clouds statewide, brightest in the east, still dry. High temperatures, 67 to 80 degrees.
On the next Maine Calling, the life and legacy of Frances Perkins. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Perkins was the first woman to serve as a cabinet officer in a presidential administration. As FDR Secretary of Labor, Perkins championed a minimum wage, unemployment compensation, and the Social Security Act, measures that have particular relevance today. Maine Calling, Wednesday, live at 1 and rebroadcast at 7 on Maine Public Radio.
As he does every election, Secretary of State Matt Dunlap has spent the day visiting polling places and answering questions from voters. Maine Public senior political correspondent Mal Leary caught up with Dunlap in Augusta to ask him about election safety and turnout during a pandemic.
Mr. Secretary, you've been visiting a number of polling places today. Have we got any problems going on, or is it going pretty smooth?
It's going very smoothly. You know, we spent the last 3 months trying to figure out what this election was going to look like, and thinking about how do you conduct an election in the time of a pandemic, something that we've never had to do. We haven't had to do this in over 100 years. And the time that we've devoted to this and working with the clerks and listening to what people's concerns were and what we had to do to protect people, I think has really paid off today. We spent about $121,000 to provide personal protective equipment for all poll workers. I've gone to polling places, Old Town, Ellsworth, Lewiston, Portland, here in Augusta, and I'm on my way now to Bangor. And what we've seen everywhere we've gone is that the layouts of the polling places have been very thoughtfully designed, enhancing social distancing, making use of those plexiglass barriers, people using sanitizer, making use of the pens that we provided. It was our intent, by the way, that they would take the pens with them. But a lot of towns have been collecting them, which is actually pretty smart because they can use them again in November. So after they've been properly sanitized and everything. So it's all worked out really well. We've had a few glitches here and there, mostly issues around, you know, some balky tabulators here and there. A few questions about, you know, people putting signs in front of polling places and that sort of thing. All very routine questions to answer for an election day.
Do you think this turnout's going to be about average, or might it be a little higher given the absentees?
I think it'll be a bit higher because of the absentees and because of the awareness around the election, as we've had this public discussion about how do you administer an election in the time of a pandemic. So with people thinking about that, it raises awareness that, yes, they're citizens, they have a right to vote. As of yesterday, we had issued almost 200,000 absentee ballots, which is about 20% turnout. So whatever we see coming in today will be obviously be on top of that. I don't think it would be outlandish to see a range of 25 to 30% overall turnout in this election, which is high for a primary. It's a great problem to have.
In some other states, you know, there's been problems with people and masks.
Yeah.
The same way when folks fight at the grocery store.
Yeah.
When they try to enforce it. Have you had any instances of that?
We have not heard about any conflicts about masks. You know, the one question I had this morning is somebody had a Trump 2020 mask on, and somebody said, you probably shouldn't wear that. I said, no, a voter can wear these things into the polls. Trump's not on the ballot anyway, so it's not even really an issue. But that's, you know, no real conflicts about masks. Some of the questions that we've gotten have been around, can a voter be turned away because they're not wearing a mask? And the answer is no. You have a fundamental right to vote. We recommend masks. We ask people to wear them. We provide them to the poll workers. Somebody shows up at a polling place, doesn't have a mask, they're still going to be able to vote.
We caught up with Secretary Dunlap at the Augusta Civic Center, where all Augusta wards voted this time around. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine's House Speaker and State Senate President have asked the rank and file if they're willing to reconvene for a special session next month. There remains disagreement among leaders about what to take up at a session. Leaders of both parties must agree to actually convene one. Governor Mills can also call the legislature back into session. The international president of the Machinist Union is calling on Congress to pressure Navy shipbuilder Bath Iron Works to return to the bargaining table and negotiate a fair agreement with striking workers. President Robert Martinez Jr. said in a letter today that the union is ready and willing to work with all partners. The company said it's fully engaged with a federal mediator and looks forward to achieving a workable solution. About 4,300 local S6 production workers went on strike June 22nd after overwhelmingly rejecting a 3-year contract proposal from the company. The company offered annual 3% raises, but the union is concerned about the hiring of subcontractors, changes in work rules, and issues involving seniority. Maine is one of 15 states announcing an agreement to work to accelerate the market for electric vehicles. The states have agreed to set goals for the percentage of zero-emission, medium, and heavy-duty vehicles. Those would include large pickup trucks and vans, school and transit buses, and even long-haul delivery trucks. The goals are to have 30% zero-emission vehicle sales by 2030 and 100% of such vehicle sales by 2015. One of the most difficult decisions facing local and state officials in Maine is whether and how to reopen schools this fall. The State Department of Education has released its initial guidelines for reopening, with districts around the state likely to release their local plans over the next month. It's also a complicated issue for teachers and families, as some feel anxious about returning in the fall. Robbie Feinberg reports.
Remote learning at Ashley Muncie's house in Hollis has been hectic, to say the least. She's got 3 young kids, including a 1-year-old daughter. When school closed in March, her husband worked from their basement, and she juggled multiple Zoom meetings for their kids each day, and took care of the baby as the pandemic unfolded around them.
So it was hard. My kids didn't much care for remote learning. They missed being in school, and they missed the schedule of it all. It did get better. We started to kind of have a flow, but they are definitely looking forward to returning to school.
Another Hollis parent, Meredith Charlton, is also eager for her son to go back. He struggled socially, she says, and Charlton says she feels like he's taken 5 steps back during the pandemic. But while Charlton trusts local school officials to keep kids safe, she's got questions. Like, who will provide childcare for students if they can only go to school a few days per week? And how will she be able to protect herself from the virus, particularly as a nurse who's immunosuppressed after a kidney transplant?
You know, as a nurse at the bedside, you know, if I get it, what happens? You know, what happens to my family and my patients? And it's scary. I work in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, with, you know, sick, vulnerable babies. And certainly we don't want them to get infected.
Health, safety, childcare, they're just a few of the many complicated factors that parents, teachers, and schools are thinking about as they weigh reopening.
The unknown right now is very scary for parents, and that's what we're facing right now, is an unknown.
Carrie Woodcock is the executive director of the Maine Parent Federation. She says while some parents want their children to head back, others, particularly those with immunocompromised children, are nervous, with some saying they won't send their children back into the classroom until a COVID-19 vaccine is available.
You know, overwhelming amount of parents want to know that their children are going to be safe. I would say that's the one consistency. And for some parents, safe means that health is the priority concern, and for other parents, safety means that their academics take priority and their social and emotional learning take priority. And I can see all three sides.
For North Yarmouth parent Sarah McIntyre, the negative effects of staying home outweigh the risk of the virus for her family. McIntyre has had to cut back her work schedule to one day a week so she can care for her teenage daughter, who has Down syndrome and autism. Without the basic routines and in-person therapies at school, McIntyre says her daughter has had both medical problems and behavioral issues.
I really do hope they open the schools, because I don't know what we're going to do.
But other parents say a lot of questions still need to be answered before they're comfortable with reopening. Amanda Cooper is a parent from Buxton who also teaches middle school in a neighboring district. She says she desperately wants to see her students, particularly after seeing how remote learning didn't work for many kids. But she's also acutely aware of the risks.
We have to do so safely. We absolutely have to do everything within our power to mitigate any potential risks to exposures, because this pandemic is not something, this virus is not something that we really have a solid grasp on yet. And I don't think public schools should be the test subjects to see how that goes, quite frankly.
Maine Education Association President Grace Levitt says ensuring that safety will require more resources, more PPE, new school configurations, and more staff to transport students, clean school buildings, and deliver meals.
Really, the list is pretty lengthy, how to make the facility safe and how to make the way we do instruction safe for in-person learning. And that's the goal that everybody wants to get back to, is in person, because we know that that is absolutely the best for our students. But we need to keep everybody safe, and that has to be taken care of.
The Maine Department of Education estimates the costs of implementing CDC guidelines statewide could be more than $320 million. Commissioner Pender Macon told Maine Public last month that the department has put in a request to cover the cost through the nearly $1 billion in federal coronavirus relief funds that the state has received so far. Steve Bailey, the executive director of the Maine School Management Association, says leaders are doing everything possible to open schools, but local communities won't be able to handle the cost of reopening on their own.
You know, federal and state dollars will be needed to make sure that this can happen. Without it, you know, communities are just going to be left on their own, and they're really going to be fall by the wayside, and we have to make sure that we don't accentuate the haves and the have-nots, you know, in terms of those who are able and those who aren't. We need to make sure it can happen across the state.
The Maine Department of Education is continuing to accept input on its draft framework for reopening schools, and the state has said it will partner with public health agencies to advise schools about reopening. State officials have said they're hoping that schools can reopen in the fall, but are advising districts to plan for many different scenarios, whether that's in-person learning, remote learning, or something in between. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And join us tomorrow for Maine Calling at 1 and a discussion about Frances Perkins, who is remembered as the woman behind the New Deal. I'm Ed Morin.